Morning. We stand up here with a range of emotions. I think the first emotion is disappointment. Disappointment that we're not practicing this week for the Green Bay Packers, that we didn't achieve our goals that we set out when we opened training camp. And I think when you have a disappointing season, it's not just on the players and the coaches. It's also on the front office. And that starts with me. And I'm sorry to our fans. They give us tremendous support. I think the second part is a tremendous sense of pride. Pride in our coaching staff, pride in our players, because we sat up here about 4 years ago and introduced Coach Peterson, and we talked about building a team that could sustain success, that could be resilient, and I think we've seen that from our team. You know, if I told you 4 years ago that we'd have 42 wins, including playoff games, a Super Bowl title, that doesn't mean that we've accomplished our goals, but we're proud of that.
Welcome in, everybody. This is the Locked On Eagles podcast. You just heard Eagles general manager Howie Roseman speaking on his press conference yesterday, and it was a very informative one for sure. Doug Peterson also talked, and you know, I thought it was extremely insightful and encouraging to see that he recognized, despite making the playoffs, that there are real changes that this Eagles team needs to make in the offseason. And we're going to get into the specifics of that press conference because there was, you know, Howie doesn't talk to the media throughout the season. So it's been months since the media got to really pick his brain about a lot of the decisions to make moves or not make moves during the year. So just a plethora of information that I want to dissect, and that's what we're going to do on today's edition of the Locked On Eagles podcast. As always, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day. But yeah, I really thought it was an honest press conference from Howie Roseman. I thought it was very, you know, back and forth. I think he was open about what he and the team failed to do this year and maybe what they failed to do over the past couple years from a roster construction perspective. But at the same time, like you just heard in that first clip, you know, he took time to express a sense of pride in the organization and what they've been able to do with so many different injuries and so many different obstacles and, you know, so much adversity to the point where, you know, it's been like any other team probably implodes, and this team did not. And that's something that I think he was right to say that they should be proud of. And I think he was right to point to the Super Bowl win a couple years ago and making the playoffs last year and getting a playoff win and, you know, getting in this year, because while you may be calling for Howie Roseman's job, there's a lot of people out there that think 2020 is a make or break year for him. I'm a Howie Roseman apologist. I think he's still one of the best general managers in football, as does Geno. So I'm not there at all. And I think it's a little reactive, very much like it was when the Eagles lost to the Miami Dolphins and people were calling for Doug Peterson's job. I think Howie Roseman 2.0 as the leader of personnel for Philadelphia, there's been way more positives than there has been negatives. Now, I've been open about he didn't have the best 2019 season, offseason or regular season, when it comes to the moves that he made. But for me, a lot of today's press conference, it followed reactions from the fans that were pretty aggressive about, you know, make or break time and how bad Howie Roseman set this team up to fail. And I don't see it that way. And we'll get into that more later on. I was really happy with the way he constructed the team in the offseason for the resources that he had. And when you have that many injuries, yes, he was a little, you know, conservative this year for sure when it comes to going all in to try to help the team out personnel wise immediately, instead of the future. He really more so was looking towards the future. At the same time, you know, he brought in guys on the practice squad like Greg Ward and Boston Scott and Joshua Perkins and Robert Davis. So you got to give him credit for that too. Howie Roseman is really the subject of today's podcast, and I'm excited to get into it because he talked about so many different things. The injuries itself, it's the elephant in the room. He quickly, before he even got a question about it, he addressed that. He talked about the balance that's needed between, you know, youth on the roster and, you know, veterans. He talked about J.J. Arcega-Whiteside versus D.K. Metcalf. He hit on Alshon Jeffrey, how they should maybe change how they evaluate prospects through the NFL draft moving forward, if he's too attached to players. It was loaded. So I cut up a bunch of audio from the press conference. I'm not going to get into every single response that he had, but the key ones that are most important for this offseason moving forward is what we will get into coming up next right here on the Locked On Eagles podcast. So we're going to hit one quick break, and then we'll get into my first half of takeaways from the press conference in segment two. So don't go anywhere. This is Locked On Eagles. And guys, we are sponsored today by our good friends at Blue Chew. This isn't just for guys who can't perform. It's for any guys who wants that extra function to enhance their performance in the bedroom. Blue Chew is prescribed online and it ships straight to your door in a discreet package. So no in-person doctor visits, no waiting in the pharmacy, and best of all, no more awkwardness, which is the absolute worst part. They're made in the USA, and since Blue Chew prepares and ships direct, they're cheaper than a pharmacy. Right now, we've got a special deal for you, our Locked On Eagles listeners. Visit BlueChew.com and get your first shipment for free when you use our special promo code Locked On. Just pay $5 shipping. Again, that's BlueChew, BlueChew.com. Promo code Locked On to try it for free. Blue Chew is the better, cheaper, faster choice, and we thank them for sponsoring the podcast today.
One of the things that obviously has been an issue for us has been the injury situation. When we look at the last 3 years, in 2017, we were able to overcome it. The last 2 years, the injuries have really hurt our football team. Now, there is a part of that that is natural during the game. There are injuries are going to happen, but we have to figure out a way to get better here. We can help from a front office perspective by looking at the players that we bring in. Hope is not a strategy when it comes to injuries. When you bring in guys that are injured, it obviously increases the risk that they'll get hurt again. We've hired a new chief medical officer. This is someone that we're very, very excited to have. He came in June, and what he asked for us was that he would observe through the season, observe our training staff, observe our weight staff, our sports science, our processes, and make recommendations to us that we would carry out.
So there you have it. That's Howie Roseman talking about injuries. And immediately off the bat, that's what he got into and specifically mentioned that they hired a chief medical officer this past June whose real decision-making really starts now. He was, like Howie just said, kind of overseeing the way the Eagles went about the health of their players from a conditioning standpoint. You know, once injuries happen, treatment, timetables of when to get these guys back on the field and when to be patient. So it's a real thing. And while I think age of the roster does have to do with it a little bit, you did see guys like Jason Peters get banged up and, you know, Malik Jackson goes down in the first game and DeSean Jackson. There were injuries for sure that Nigel Bradham. But at the same time, I don't want to blame Howie Roseman's roster construction for the injuries because you see guys like Corey Clement go down and you see Nelson Aguilar get injured and guy in his prime, Zach Ertz as well, goes down. Dallas Goedert was hurt this year. Miles Sanders got banged up at the end of the season, as did Jordan Howard. And then on defense, I could talk about Derek Barnett. I can talk about every single cornerback that's on the roster. That's why, again, I am a bigger fan of Howie Roseman than maybe others are right now. Howie was definitely in everybody's good graces before this season, but I think this season people really did get, more so they started treating him like they did when he was the general manager the first time around. And the injuries were a key part of that because you've just never seen anything like it. And the Eagles are so quiet and mum about how they go about, you know, medical stuff with their team when it comes to injuries. So you look at Howie Roseman, a guy that's dodged that often, but he was very honest about it today. And, you know, hopefully that chief medical officer is someone that can create positive change for this team in 2020. And I like that also he said in that, you know, sound clip that hope is not a strategy, that they need to really look into this. Because while I can't figure out what the problem is when it comes to injuries with this team, because I've never seen anything like it. I didn't think I'd see anything like 2018, and we saw what 2019 was. So while we've tried to figure out the solutions to the problem, and we've been trying to figure out what the problem is, Howie Roseman's job is to find those problems and solutions. So while we can't figure it out, and we think maybe it's just an anomaly, That can't be the approach for Howie and for this organization, and it clearly isn't. So that was huge, and I'm glad that he really talked about that today, because through everything that happened this year, I thought the assistant coaches were really bad this year, especially from a player development perspective. I thought there were a lot of players, veterans and young guys, that regressed. You know, adversity with guys talking to the media behind players' backs. While all that was a part of why this Eagles team did not reach their goals this year, injuries were the biggest part. If you stay healthy, even, you know, half of the injuries you get rid of, this team is probably still playing football right now, and they definitely are better than a 9-7 football team. So injuries were the big part, and he really hammered that home pretty quickly. Another key thing, though, that I was really excited to hear him talk about was, because the Eagles have won the past couple years with, you know, sometimes it's a lot of veterans, right? Their core was kind of already intact when Doug Peterson took over. They had a lot of veterans, really good players that Howie, you know, gave the contract extensions to, Zach Ertz, Lane Johnson. But then this year you see just how important the youth was to this team. You see Miles Sanders, Boston Scott, Greg Ward, those kind of players, Craven LeBlanc on the defensive side, Josh Sweat. Even a guy like Anthony Rush stepped up. There were so many young guys that rallied around Carson Wentz to help them win this year in a different way. So that hasn't been the strategy for the Eagles the past couple years. They've been in a window right now that they're trying to maximize. But, you know, Howie said that an infusion of youth is going to be necessary for this team moving forward. But also there needs to be that balance, because you see teams like the Cleveland Browns, who without good leadership, you know, from the coaching staff and also from the players who haven't had that playoff experience, that haven't been battle tested, those kind of teams don't work out either. So they need to have that balance. And, you know, they haven't really been able to have that over the past couple of years because of the lack of draft picks. And now they have 10 of those picks. And, you know, you got young pieces already that they've drafted. And, you know, you can't blame Howie for that. I think Howie had to get Carson Wentz, and that gave up a lot of draft picks, and he was trying to win a championship, which he did by giving up a third-round pick for Ronald Darby, by giving up a fourth-round pick for Jay Ajayi, and trying to give up a third-round pick to get Golden Tate to bring this team last year to the next level. So, look, it wasn't a bad 3 years of that same team he talked about, like he said. This team isn't a team that needs a complete overhaul for sure, but I am excited that he recognizes that this team needs more youth. I want to play that full clip right now for you.
We have a lot to do going forward. When we look at our team from 2017 to 2019, we knew that we had one team, really a team that we were going to basically stick with. We didn't have a lot of resources in terms of draft picks. That's on me. We made trades for some veteran players to go win. We stick to that. We're glad of those decisions. But going forward, we need to infuse youth in this team. We have 10 draft picks. We think we're going to have 10 draft picks in this draft. We're excited about that. When we look at what the young players did for our team during down the stretch, it's a great tribute to them. It's a great tribute to our coaching staff. It's a great tribute to our developmental program that we take a lot of pride in.
So, I mean, and there you have it. They were trying to win, and that justified trading draft picks for the guys that he mentioned, and the guys that I mentioned. When you talk about the guys that he traded for, like Ronald Darby, Jay Ajayi, you know, a Tim Jernigan, those were players that were in their prime, too. So Howie Roseman hasn't always been this guy that's all in on just winning now with 30-plus-year-old players. That hasn't always been his strategy. That's had to be what it was this year because they were so limited in resources to get young players. But Howie Roseman, to me, has been someone that has been able to maintain a long-term approach while at the same time trying to win football games right now. You can have both. You can be aggressive and still prioritize youth by, again, Darby, Jernigan, Ajayi, signing a Rodney McLeod and a Brandon Brooks or a Jordan Howard as well. And he mentioned those guys specifically because they were able to go after guys like that in their prime that get big contracts. But this year, because you're spending so much money on veterans already and because you didn't have a lot of draft picks because of all the things I said, and because you move up to get Andre Dillard, they had to go for guys like Malik Jackson.
Because of the resources we had the last couple of years, we were trying to find what were the undervalued markets. And so when you talk about the older guys, you know, when you go into free agency, a lot of times the guys that are 26 and 27, kind of what we did in 16 mm-hmm. with Brandon and Rodney, those guys are getting top of the market. And so we were trying to figure out ways we can improve this team. And bring in some of those guys.
Another thing I love that he said there was talking about, you know, different ways to find talent, you know, untapped markets. And Howie Roseman has been, the NFL was not really a big-time trading league before Howie Roseman took back over for the Eagles. And he really jump-started, I think, the trade era in the NFL, at least to a certain degree. It took a step back this year. There weren't almost any trades at the deadline, but when it comes to trading for that kind of talent, you know, draft trades, compensatory pick formula that he is very in tune with. That's another thing that, for me, I have confidence in him, is that when he can't just go out and sign a Rodney McLeod or a Brandon Brooks, he's smart enough to try to go into those avenues and find talent. One place that Howie could have found more talent was the second round of the 2019 NFL Draft. He took Miles Sanders, who should win Rookie of the Year. He, by the way, is a finalist for Offensive Rookie of the Year with, I think it's Josh Jacobs, A.J. Brown, and Kyler Murray. So, yeah, he found a running back of the future, an all-around weapon that can grow with Carson Wentz for the next, you know, however long, hopefully. Sanders is already one of the most explosive weapons in football. And I think Howie has a better track record as a drafter than people give him credit for, too. I think even this past draft class, Dillard, if you found a left tackle of the future and a running back of the future in a class where you had almost no picks, I mean, that is significant. But he could have had also a star wide receiver of the future, too, in DK Metcalf. And we're all very familiar with him now. If you weren't already in the draft, which I don't know how you wouldn't have been, because I feel like he was the consensus wide receiver one up until he ran a slow, he performed bad with that three cone drill and everybody started to overreact. But for the most part, I thought Metcalf was the best receiver in the 2019 draft, and the Eagles did not take him. They passed on him for J.J. Arcega-Whiteside. Metcalf ends up ending the Eagles' season in the wild card round with a huge performance, including a game-clinching huge bomb down the field, and he also had a huge touchdown over Avante Maddox on Sunday. So that's a miss that Howie Roseman mentioned specifically during this press conference when he was asked about it. And, you know, he was more honest about it than I actually thought he would when it comes to drafting Arcega-Whiteside over Metcalf. And that clearly did not work out. JJ was, while he was injured down the stretch this year, and he made some, you know, eye-popping plays for sure. I thought that those two grabs on the first drive in the Dallas game were super impressive. I thought the down-the-field catches against the Patriots and the Seahawks were really strong, and that over-the-shoulder grab against the Giants on Monday Night Football really showed off some of that potential to be that big receiver that can go up and get those contested catches and make tough catches. But, you know, it doesn't even compare to what guys like Metcalf did and A.J. Brown and, you know, Terry McLaurin, guys that went after him. And apparently, there was a story that came out after the press conference by Jeff McClain that said, in fact, because Howie didn't say it, but DK Metcalf was apparently higher on their board than JJ was, but he failed the Eagles' physical. And that, while, yes, DK had a neck injury at Ole Miss that, you know, led to some concern for teams, was it the medical staff that once again kind of screwed the Eagles over here by, I don't want to say misdiagnosing what Metcalf's status was at the time from a health perspective, but Seattle was confident enough to draft him in the second round, and they ended up getting almost a 1,000-yard season, including a huge-time postseason performance. So was it the medical staff's fault again, in this time that the Eagles have J.J. Arcega-Whiteside instead of D.K. Metcalf? It would seem fitting, for sure, but I think it really sounded like he said that J.J. still has a lot of tools in his body. There was a lot of college production there that they liked, and but at the same time, it's a huge offseason for him. He was pretty honest about that, and it is. It's a huge offseason for Arcega-Whiteside. I just don't know what he can do to my stance on JJ, and I said it on the podcast the other day, was while I think you should still, I don't think 1 year is enough for a wide receiver. As people that have watched Nelson Aguilar over the last 5 years, you got to know that wide receivers don't always take 1 or 2 years to really get going. So for a second-round pick, you want to give him opportunities next year, not have him dead in the water, not bury him like you did after he dropped that ball against the Lions, because I really think that did hurt him significantly, his confidence and his progression in his rookie season. At the same time, JJ's presence does not deter me, if I'm Howie, from going out and drafting multiple wide receivers or drafting at least one high and signing a free agent or maybe even considering keeping around Alshon Jeffrey. Arcega-Whiteside did not do nearly enough this season to convince me that he can have one of those starting three spots and I don't have to go out there and spend money on a free agent wide receiver, or that I don't have to go out there and use significant draft capital. His role next year is very much up in the air. Right now, if I would predict it, I would say wide receiver 4. Here's exactly what Roseman had to say about JJ.
You know, JJ is a talented kid. He's got tools in his body. He had production You know, I think back to after the Baltimore preseason game, and it's funny because myself and some members of our personnel staff got some calls from people around the league that maybe he was going to be the rookie of the year. And so that doesn't mean that he doesn't have to take a jump, because he does. This offseason is really important for him. You know, I don't think we saw the best of JJ. He was affected a little by injuries. At the same token, there have been some successful receivers from this draft class, and we don't have our head in the sand and not notice that and go back and kind of look at that.
Yeah, look, I need more convincing when it comes to Arthego Whiteside. I know Geno doesn't, and he stands JJ for sure. That was one of his my guys of the 2019 draft, and I don't blame him for that. I had a lot of those players as well in the draft that even if they struggled after 1 year, I was going to believe in them. But I wasn't a big fan of his coming out of Stanford to begin with. I thought he wasn't one of the most explosive players. When he ran a 4.49, I thought that was very shocking, and he doesn't play with that speed on the field. He's just very stiff in the hips. While he can create separation with his route running for sure, he's just not someone that's explosive and gets a lot of separation very easily. While he's got a great catch radius and really good in contested plays in the red zone, you didn't see that this year. I hate to use the eye test, but when you look at him and then you look at these other rookies, you think that guy looks way closer to Mac Hollins than he does a DK Metcalf. So it's a big year for him for sure, but that right now looks like one of those really bad whiffs. And maybe it is because of college production versus potential when it comes to how the Eagles evaluate prospects in the NFL draft. JJ was someone that was way more productive from a statistical standpoint at college than DK Metcalf was. And that's something that the Eagles have prioritized. And it maybe was Joe Douglas's philosophy, and I'm glad how he said today that maybe that's something they need to take a look at and reconsider. A lot of people would not say that publicly. There's a lot of big egos in the NFL, and for Howie to admit that, once again, I was really impressed with his honesty in this press conference. In fairness, it could have been Joe Douglas that wanted a guy like Derek Barnett, who broke Reggie White's record at Tennessee, or a J.J. Arcega-Whiteside, or a Donnell Pumphrey, right, who broke records at San Diego State, and I still cannot believe that pick actually happened. But nonetheless, like, you see that college production has been something the Eagles really have liked. But Howie said today, and he just came out and said it, nobody asked him about it, which was really encouraging. That, and you guys know me, I'm an upside guy to a fault, so I don't need someone to blow up the box score in college football for me to believe that they can be a legitimate NFL player. Once again, I'm a ceiling guy, I'm not a floor guy. And I'm glad that that might be the new philosophy for the Eagles this year, because he even said there were a ton of rookie wide receivers this year that did not produce a whole lot in college that thrived. Here's exactly what he had to say about production in college versus talent and potential.
I think when we look at it, the most surprising thing for us, as we've kind of studied this and the things that are important, was there are three rookie receivers who never had more than 40 catches in a college season who've been tremendously productive this year. So is that a factor for us when we look at college production and we kind of see how important that is to us? Do we got to go back and look at that? And I think we do.
Love it, love it, love it. I think upside has worked for the Eagles. Andre Dillard, while, you know, he produced, especially in pass protection at Washington State, at the same time, he wasn't someone that, I don't know, I don't want to call him a non-finished product, but Dillard was very much a ceiling pick. Miles Sanders, the same thing, only had 1 year of playing time at Penn State, because before that he was sitting behind, you know, Saquon Barkley. Look how that panned out. Josh Sweat in the fourth round, someone that wasn't utilized very well at Florida State, someone that dealt with injuries, but he had that Jadeveon Clowney-like frame. And this year, Josh Sweat, I think, was probably their third or fourth, I don't know, but he was a great, I don't, because Vinnie Curry was pretty good this year, as was Derek Barnett and Brandon Graham, but Josh Sweat was probably a top three pass rusher when it comes to consistency and also availability. So Dillard, Sanders, Sweat, even Carson Wentz to a degree. If Jared Goff, if they could have picked between Wentz and Goff, they would have chose Carson Wentz, who was a small school guy, played at an FCS level, and Jared Goff at Cal just put up huge numbers, but they wanted that upside. They wanted that potential. Not saying Carson Wentz didn't produce in college, but it was at a smaller level, and it was definitely more of an upside pick compared to Jared Goff. So it has worked for the Eagles in the past, and I think that's something that they need to change moving forward, and I'm really glad that he brought that up today. And I think he definitely did learn when they did not take DK Metcalf over J.J. Arcega-Whiteside. One other thing here before we take a break and continue to get into a lot of the takeaways from this press conference: practice squad players, when to promote them, how he talked about that. But what I didn't like was that he preached special teams, and I'm not someone that likes to neglect special teams for sure, but I don't know. Am I naive for wanting backups that can play offense and defense? I mean, when it came down to it and Mac Hollins had to be your third wide receiver, I've never seen someone so useless. And we watched Josh Huff in this offense before. We've seen Doriel Green Beckham in this offense before. Riley Cooper. So to say that Mac Hollins was the most useless wide receiver on the field I've ever seen, or maybe not ever, but pretty close, that's saying something. So you got to give them credit for finding Greg Ward and Joshua Perkins and Boston Scott and those kind of players. But why it took so long, I think they need to change that philosophy as well, that especially with how many injuries this team has suffered over the past couple years. Yeah, special teams is a huge part of it. You would like them to have that ability to play special teams, but that should come secondary. These guys need to be able to play offense and defense first and then turn them into special teams players. You got to rely on your coaches to develop them into those kinds of players. I don't want to have special teams aces on my roster. That's just not the kind of personnel guy that I am specifically, because you look at a guy like Sidney Jones. Sidney Jones never played special teams before this year. And then at the end of the year, he was a pretty damn good gunner. I mean, he pinned the Giants down to the 2-yard line in the biggest game of the year to clinch the division. And Sidney Jones was not someone they drafted thinking, oh, we could get special teams production out of them.
Well, I think, and Coach can add to that, you know, from our perspective, we want to make sure the coaches have whoever they need on game day. You know, the 46-man roster, really, we want to make sure that it's the coaches and that gives them the best chance to win. And sometimes it's not as simple, and we talked about a little, I think Ruben asked this question in training camp about a guy like Greg Ward. And you know, sometimes you're trying to figure out if the guy's not a starter, what's the role on special teams? You know, how can you complete your special teams? How can you make sure you have enough guys out there that are doing that? And so those are the conversations. I mean, everything that is done for the Philadelphia Eagles, we are talking about. This is a collaborative process for all of us. We are talking about things all the time, you know, probably in coach's mind a little too much during the season as he's trying to game plan for things, but that's how we roll.
I will say, though, once again, you got to give them props for bringing these guys in. It's going to be so huge. The Eagles have been able to find, again, talent in every different avenue. And to see all those practice squad guys out there producing and to see, you know, late round picks like Matt Pryor and Halapulivahdi Vaitai and a guy that you got off the street and Craven LeBlanc in free agency last year, that's super encouraging. That, yeah, it took them a while, but those guys were in the system, and also, you know, guys like Anthony Rush and TJ Edwards as well. Again, I was impressed with Howie. I thought he was honest. I don't think he had the best 2019 season for sure from a personnel standpoint, with decisions that he made or did not make, but he came out and he said that's the one good thing about Howie 2.0 is that the first time around, he was very smug. He still does this sometimes, but there was a lot of ego to him, and I don't know, when he got exiled to the other side of the NovaCare complex when Chip Kelly took over, he did come out as a new guy that was willing to adjust because he had so many different strategies now to add talent. He just seemed like someone that was willing to learn. You know, he talked to so many different personnel members of different sports leagues, and that's why I have confidence that what he's saying is true, that he will adjust each and every year, because the NFL creating a sustainable contender is a puzzle. While, yeah, you need a good head coach and a quarterback, it changes every single year how you can win. Sometimes you need all veterans, sometimes you need a balance, and sometimes, like this year, for what the Eagles' culture was in the locker room, the position, the situation they were in at 5-7, they needed an infusion of youth. So Again, very impressed with Howie today, and I'm glad too he said that one of his faults is that he gets too attached to players. Hopefully, though, that doesn't deter him from not signing Malcolm Jenkins. Like, they got to make sure Malcolm Jenkins is locked up. That's the one thing you can't. I'm glad he came out and said that, but you can't blame him either for getting attached to these players, because a lot of their best players are these older guys: Malcolm Jenkins, Brandon Graham, Jason Kelsey. Jason Peters was before this significant drop off this year. So it's hard not to really understand where he's coming from getting attached to these guys, but just, again, a very open and honest Howie Roseman on his Wednesday press conference. All right, we got to hit one more break here on the Lockdown Eagles podcast. When we come back, we'll hear a little bit from Doug Peterson, who had a lot of news when it comes to his assistant coaching staff, and a few more tidbits from Howie Roseman as well. Don't go anywhere. This is the Lockdown Eagles podcast. All right, everybody, welcome back in. Lou DiBiase joining you on this Thursday edition of the show. One thing I was very disappointed about: Howie Roseman and Doug Peterson talked to the media on Wednesday. I was disappointed that nobody asked about the source that was talking bad about Carson Wentz, because I was curious to see what his response would have been, what his reaction would have been to that now happening 2 years straight. And not if you knew who the source was, but if you figured out who it was, or, you know, just having players believe it's player A or player B, would that be enough to move on from one of those guys? And the big name that's always talked about when we talk about this anonymous source is Alshon Jeffrey. And how he did talk about Alshon, though, and someone asked him why they decided to guarantee his money in 2020. And I actually think that his reasoning made sense. Howie loves to give guaranteed money up front and free up the initial salary cap hit to use that money for other players. The problem was is that there was a significant drop-off by Alshon that I don't think a lot of people saw coming. He could be the source, or players at least think he is, which makes this very tricky too, a very tricky decision if you want to bring that back into the locker room. So in the injury too, now this was a guy that was already slowing down. He's about to be 30. Now he's coming off a really significant leg injury. For me, my tone is very much changed on Alshon. He was someone that I didn't believe was the source. Maybe I didn't want to believe it. I still believe that despite his struggles this year, that he could be a solid number two when healthy, very reliable in the clutch. But my tone has changed. I've seen a lot of the evidence, and I do believe that he's been making some comments about Carson Wentz, and with the injury as well, I think they need to move on, and I think they need to bite the bullet. You could bring him back hypothetically with DeSean Jackson, a rookie, JJ, and Greg Ward, instead of signing a free agent, but for me, you really need speed on this team. You need speed for Carson Wentz, and you're going to get that with D-Jax, but you don't have anything else outside of DeSean Jackson, because Nelson Agholor most likely will not be back next year. So you need speed, and that is something that Howie Roseman talked about.
Well, you're always looking to get faster. You're always looking to get more explosive. You know, I think that that's always been something that's been fun for us to try to do. And when we looked at last year and where we were and adding DeSean, and you know, when we get all these, and I know Jeffrey's talk about some of the data we look at and the GPS numbers, you know, Nelson Agholor is one of the top 10 fastest receivers in the league, you know. And so we felt with adding him, DeSean and Nelly, and, you know, Miles is an explosive player. Our tight ends are explosive group. You know, when we looked at it, we felt like we had some speed on the field.
He said a lot of interesting stuff there. And yeah, I would much rather prefer, you know, a trio. I'm not saying that you don't need a big target that can go up and get tough grabs, and I think that JJ could eventually be that, but you also have that in Zach Ertz and Dallas Goedert. So I would like to see next year's unit at wide receiver be a combination of DeSean Jackson and then two other guys that have speed. I'm not saying they can't be big too, that, you know, can go up and get a ball. T. Higgins can do that from Clemson. Denzel Mims from Baylor. But I'm just imagining DeSean Jackson, K.J. Hamler, and I don't want to say like Robbie Anderson too, but, you know, you bring in a K.J. Hamler, DeSean Jackson. I know that's two really small receivers, but bringing those two and then a bigger guy that can also go up and, you know, make plays on the ball, like, I don't know, Breshad Perriman or somebody. That is something I'd rather prefer than having Alshon Jeffrey. And I do think that speed is something that Howie does prioritize. I don't think he's someone that just wants just giant oofs at wide receiver. Torrey Smith, he brought in. Mike Wallace, DeSean Jackson. He has tried to get Carson Wentz that deep threat. Nelson Aguilar, too. Miles Sanders is an explosive player. And while he was wrong to take Arcega Whiteside over the other speed guys, I don't think Howie was crazy to believe that Aguilar and Deshaun were going to be those guys for Carson. I mean, Aguilar, like he said, was someone that once he gets going is one of the more explosive players in the league. The problem is now he's regressed significantly, you know, in tracking the football deep. In 2018, he was up there in the NFL in 30-plus yard catches. He was making deep plays, and he was the deep threat in 2017, too, over Torrey Smith. So I don't think his strategy was totally wrong. I would have preferred him to take a Metcalf just overall as a prospect over Arcega Whiteside. But, I mean, I can't really totally blame him. I couldn't have foreseen Aguilar dropping off that significantly back to his, like, 2016 ways. So, but they got to bring back speed, and I don't know. For me, he said a lot of good things about Alshon Jeffrey today, or I'm sorry, yesterday. I keep saying today. That's what the overnight shift will do to you. You don't know what day is which anymore, but I think it's time to move on. I really do, and it's sad how quickly the legend of Alshon Jeffrey in Philadelphia has changed, because I've said it before on the show, it was one of heroism that is now one of being a snake, and that's really unfortunate, especially if it's not true. But if it's true, that stinks, because I think that sentiment then is justified, because Carson Wentz just did not deserve, and a lot of those comments were inaccurate, but he just did not deserve to be talked about like that with one of his teammates, especially a guy like Alshon Jeffrey, who said that he came to Philadelphia because of Carson Wentz. All right, let's move on real quick before we wrap up the show to the head coach, Doug Peterson, because maybe what he said meant the most, like how he said a lot of things philosophically that could change this offseason with how they construct this roster. They have a lot of work to do. Like he said, it could be a very different looking team next year. Still mostly the same core pieces that have helped you battle for titles the past couple years and win one, but a very different team with a lot of different role players, and I'm sure different young guys, different veterans as well. But Doug Peterson, a lot of substance to what he said. Didn't say a whole lot, but he said Mike Groh, offensive coordinator, and Carson Walsh, the wide receiver coach, will be back on the team next year.
I think both of those guys did an outstanding job for me this year. There was a lot of things we faced offensively, as you know, through adversity, through injury, many different, I think, facets of trying to get the pieces together. And so my hat goes off to both of those gentlemen because of the game plans that Mike and I and the offensive staff put together, first of all. And then here towards the end of the season, Carson Walsh having a big impact on getting these young players ready to go to play and to play at a high level. That's not easy. That's not easy for guys to basically come off our practice roster who were, what, within weeks of being on our roster, you know, or being on the practice squad, to be elevated to game status. It's not easy to do. And these two gentlemen did an outstanding job for me, for the team, and really put us in a position to, be in the postseason here at the end of the year. Yes, both those guys will be back.
So I had to throw in that extra part at the end where the media asked him to specify, will those two guys be back next year? And he said, as you heard, yes, they will be back. And look, guys, this was the risk when they made the playoffs. Me and Gino even said it on a podcast, to make the playoffs or not to make the playoffs. It was a whole topic of one specific show, was, is making the playoffs worth them maybe keeping these guys around? And while you do have to give those guys credit for getting the practice squad players ready and all these young guys that weren't a part of the starting lineup for the majority of the season, at the same time, there's been, to me, more negatives for Mike Groh the past 2 years than positives. And I think Doug deserves more of the credit for the turnaround than Mike Groh does. And Carson Walsh, too. Yeah, Greg Ward looked really good this year at the end of the season, but there were just too many players that did not develop and that even regressed at wide receiver. Alshon Jeffrey did. Not saying that he needs a lot of coaching anymore as a veteran, but Nelson Aguilar significantly regressed this year. That a huge part of it is on Carson Walsh. And Matt Collins, too, was. Matt Collins at least made some plays in 2017. He was useless this year. J.J. Arcega-Whiteside could not be cross-trained at different wide receiver positions. That's on Carson Walsh. J.J. not looking good. That's a lot on Carson Walsh, but that's the risk, is when you get hot at the end of the year, regardless of why you get hot, it could lead to a lot of these people, you know, saving their jobs. Hopefully, even if those guys stay, they bring in someone new, whether it's a quarterback coach or just another offensive assistant from college, whether it's Josh McCown. They really do need to bring in a fresh new perspective to help out Doug Peterson. As for defensive coordinator Jim Schwartz, Doug, he wasn't as adamant. A very interesting back and forth with him in the media when talking about Schwartz. Here's that part.
Oh, yeah, part of the evaluation process and all that. I would assume, yes.
I mean, but you said you had
confidence. Yeah, Jim is, he's currently my DC, yeah.
On Jeff's question, he asked you about Mike Rowe, and you said he'll be back. I want him back. He asked you about Jim Schwartz. You were a little more vague. Just to clarify, if he doesn't get the Browns job or another job, do you want Jim back as your D coordinator?
Yeah, and listen, I'm with all my staff guys. I mean, I'm in that process right now of evaluating, and would love to have them all back, obviously. We know what this league is about. And anytime an assistant coach can get a promotion, whether it's here or somewhere else, I encourage that. But you know, as I evaluate and look, I mean, we're only 3 days removed from the season, so everything's still fresh on my mind too. So we're still evaluating, and all my coaches are in that evaluation process as well.
So when you say Grote and Walsh are coming back,
I mean, listen, I know what I said, okay? And yes, but at the same time, I'm still evaluating the whole process, right? They are still currently here, and I'm going to continue to evaluate and assemble the best staff moving forward. But currently, yes, they're still here.
That is interesting. That doesn't sound like a guy that was as aggressive in saying Jim Schwartz would be back like he was specifically Mike Groh and Carson Walsh. And that's honestly, it's good news for me. And like Groh and Walsh and those other offensive coaches, you do got to give Jim Schwartz credit for what he was able to do with, you know, moving parts on defense a lot this year and last year too. And I think he's gotten better at adjusting over the course of his tenure in Philadelphia. He has blitzed more, but it's still very black and white with him, where when he's blitzing, that's all he's doing. And there's just too many head-scratching packages where when he is blitzing cover zero, he still has soft zone coverage. I don't know. It's just for me, I don't want to say Jim Schwartz is a bad defensive coordinator. He just, the philosophy with him and what I want out of a defense, it just does not line up a whole lot. And he's also just not the style of coach that I'm a big fan of. I think it's very different to Doug Peterson, where Schwartz kind of, I don't know, it just, he doesn't always make his players better. I don't think he always maxes out their strengths, and I don't think he always tries to cover up their weaknesses. All year long, he put Jalen Mills and Ronald Darby on an island. First off, he stuck with those kind of guys. He didn't hold them accountable. He likes his guys. It's his guys that he's going to stick with, ride or die. Fine. Okay, they're going to be out there, but then at least have safeties over the top. No, it was so much, you know, cover one, man coverage, where these guys are on an island, and you see players like Devontae Parker just tear them up, and then over and over again, and he does not adjust. And that cost them a game. It almost cost them the season. So, and he's not matchup based either. Okay, yeah, we have Darby and Mills out here, there. Mills is more aggressive. Darby is more speed. Never mind. We're going to have Jalen Mills on the burner because he's on the right side of the field, and Darby's going to cover the big guy because he's on the left. So it's just more so philosophically, I just have a lot of problems with Jim Schwartz as a defensive coordinator. The defense isn't screwed if he's still the DC next year, and they can upgrade at cornerback and other positions, but you can't use personnel as an excuse because Schwartz has personnel say. He has handpicked guys like Zach Brown this year and Nigel Bradham and Ronald Darby he handpicked, and Malik Jackson too, so, and Andrew Sandejo. So that's just, I think actually it was encouraging to hear that Doug Peterson is at least considering switching up that spot. All right, that was a lot to process. Thank you so much for tuning in. There was a lot to get into that press conference, so I wanted to run this podcast a little bit longer just to get in all my takeaways from what they said, because again, Howie said a lot. Doug said not a whole lot, but it weighed a lot when he did speak. So it was very informative, and I hope you enjoyed this edition of the podcast. It's going to be a really fun offseason. It's going to be a different one for sure. They've got 10 draft picks, or at least they think they're going to, when the comp pick formula all shapes up, and free agency is going to be different. I think their philosophy is going to be different. what they do still at the coaching staff. You know, what they say is different than what they'll actually do. We know that in the NFL and in sports in general, there's a lot of coach speak, and that can change. So I'm excited to get this going and, you know, head into year three of an offseason right here on the Locked On Eagles podcast. We will be back. We're going to do a Friday mailbag, so we will be back tomorrow, and then we'll take a couple days off, and we'll get going next week. And then after, at the start of next week, we'll be 7 days away from the Senior Bowl. So we're going to get into some early draft coverage, as I've teased every episode this week, that Gino is actually going to be traveling down to Mobile. Very excited about that for our draft coverage. So hopefully we'll get some really good interviews down there in Mobile, and we'll start up the draft process, and we'll start talking free agency and salary cap space and all that stuff. I wish the Eagles were still playing, but still a very exciting time of the year to be a Philadelphia sports fan. That's going to do it for today's edition of the show. Head over to LockedOnEagles.com if you missed any of our other podcasts, or subscribe on any podcast provider. And if you could, we would really appreciate you guys leaving us a review, hopefully a 5-star rate too. Let us know how we're doing. It's how we can grow the show. Follow us on Twitter as well, at LockedOnBirds, at DiBiase LOE, and at Gino_LOE. As always, thank you for downloading, thank you for listening, and let's go Birds!